Hi everybody, welcome along to the Friday freebie edition of the Dispatches podcast. My name is Brendan Malone. It is great to be back with you again. And today I have a little treat for you. We're going to have an interview with a guest all the way from Ireland. His name is David Quinn. I'll introduce him in just a second. But the reason I'm talking to David is because of the Coolark riots that happened in Ireland just last Monday. A fiery confrontation between police and protesters over the growing immigration crisis that is unfolding and has been unfolding for quite some time in Ireland. David is an Irish social and religious commentator, and from 1996 to 2003, he was the editor at the Irish Catholic newspaper. He served as the religious and social affairs correspondent for the Irish Independent from 2003 to 2005. He has often appeared on Irish current affairs programmes, and since 2007, he has been the director of the Iona Institute Advocacy Group. He has campaigned against the liberalisation of Irish abortion laws, the introduction of same-sex marriage, and the legalisation of assisted suicide. He is a member of the Dublin branch of Legatus, which promotes Catholic values in corporate business, and he is a regular contributor to the Irish edition of the Sunday Times, and it's a real privilege to be able to have him on the show. Before I get started with this interview, don't forget, if you want to get access to an exclusive patrons-only episode of the Dispatches podcast every single day of the week, that's an episode every day from Monday through Friday, then go to patreon.com/leftfootmedia. The link is in today's show notes. And become a $5 monthly patron. For less than the cost of a cup of coffee, you will get access to a daily dose of commentary on current affairs, social and cultural issues from me via the Dispatches podcast. That's patreon.com/leftfootmedia. The link is in today's show notes. And a huge thank you to all of our patrons. It's thanks to you that today's episode is made possible. Alrighty, folks, without any further ado, let's have our conversation with David Quinn about the Coolark riots and the worsening immigration situation in Ireland. Hi, my name is Brendan Malone and you're listening to The Dispatches, the podcast that strives to cut through all the noise in order to challenge the popular narratives of the day with some good old-fashioned contrarian thinking. You might not always agree, but at least you'll be taking a deeper look at the world around you. David, thank you so much for being back with us. I'm tempted to call you our Irish correspondent because you've been on so many times, but then I might have to pay you some sort of stipend. Just tell our listeners who may be new to the podcast since we last spoke a little bit about yourself and the work that you do.
Okay. So thanks for this and thanks for the opportunity, Brendan. So I've been a commentator and writer in Ireland for the last, well, since the mid-90s. I've written for a whole variety of newspapers. I've had a weekly national newspaper column since 1994. Currently, I'm writing for the Sunday Independent. That's the biggest selling paper here. I do quite a lot of radio. I do a fair amount of television, less than I used to, by the way, because once upon a time, when the church scandals were breaking, I was always on programmes. So when the big referendum campaigns and the issues like abortion and same-sex marriage were going on, it was in huge demand. But I'm still out there, still appearing in programmes. I was editor of the Irish Catholic for a while. That's the main Catholic paper here. Of a Twitter account, at DAV Quinn, for anybody who wants to follow it, with about 27,000 followers. So I guess I've been sort of the most prominent Catholic social religious commentator here for that time.
I should also say you're a fellow traveller. You're a Burkean conservative in the mould of the great Edmund Burke, aren't you?
I guess that'll be an accurate description, yes.
Awesome. David, tell us a little bit about Coolock. And before we even get into the events that happened there just over a week ago, what has been going on there before this escalation that has made international headlines last week?
So basically, Dublin, like a lot of cities, is it's kind of divided into a mainly working class part and a mainly middle class part. And so the mainly working class part tends to be north of the River Liffey that bisects the city. And Coolock is on the north side. So Coolock is just a kind of traditional working class suburb that, you know, used to have a fair amount of local employment. So you have things like the Cadbury's chocolate factory. Everybody who comes to Ireland loves Cadbury's chocolate. They had a Tato factory, which is Tato crisps, and everybody loves Tato crisps. And they also had a Crown factory, painting factory, a crown paint factory, should I say. And this has become the focus of the action at the time, you know, for the time being. So basically, they are trying to convert this former paint factory into an accommodation centre for up to 500 migrants. And talk about this has been going on for months, and there has been a protest camp outside this paint factory, this used paint factory, for months. And it's going into a very economically depressed area. So Ireland is going through an economic boom. We have low unemployment, but nonetheless, there's pockets around the country where there's still a lot of social deprivation. The kind of tech boom has largely passed these areas, because these, like the Tato factory I mentioned, the Cadbury's factory, they are much smaller local employers than they used to be. One of them was closed down completely, like the Crown Paint factory is closed. So these people are kind of thinking, we can barely cope with what we got. We're already areas of social deprivation. So what are you doing moving 500 asylum seekers into this country? Put them into areas that are better off.
And so that they've been there. Approximately how long has this protest encampment been in place before the events that happened last week?
For months. I couldn't say exactly how long, but they've been there for months. I mean, I don't live too far from Coolock. I'm only about a 10-minute drive away. And in fact, there's a cinema across the road that I would sometimes go to with my wife. And so we pass it by, and there it is. And it's been there for months and months. And, you know, signs like Coolock says no and that kind of thing.
And relatively peaceful that whole time, just, I guess, the usual protest-type disruptions, but nothing major?
Just sitting there. And so you see people sitting at kind of, you know, almost picnic tables that they've just kind of, you know, this furniture you bring out and you set up specially for the day. And so you see them with their flasks and cups of tea and this sort of stuff, because they've been there through, you know, winter as well. So kind of, I don't know what happens at night. I don't know if you pass by, would there be people there 2 a.m? Certainly lately there has been, because they're worried that it's 2 a.m. that they'll begin to convert it into this accommodation centre.
This suddenly escalated last Monday. I think, was it maybe Sunday your time or Monday our time? I'm not sure which it was, but it was last week. It escalated after months of relatively peaceful encampment protest. What happened last Monday that all of a sudden this went from 0 to 100 quite quickly, and by the end of the day seemed to be out of control?
Because they decided we are now going to try and convert the factory into an accommodation centre. So this is what the kind of local protesters were trying to stop. And then it was decided the time has come to make this conversion. And so guards were sent in, JCBs were sent in order to make it happen. And then this protest kicked off.
Tell our listeners, sorry. Garda are the local police. What's JCB?
Yes. A JCB is a digger that you'd see on building sites.
Oh, of course. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm with you. The yellow digger.
Exactly. So the protests just began to get bigger. More people began to come into the area, including from outside the area. There is no question that there were agitators who aren't, some of whom are genuinely far right, decided to jump in on the act, and they had been kind of in on the act since the start. And the complaints from the government is, you know, spreading misinformation about the type of people coming in, the unvetted mail, all the sort of thing. You know, misinformation that they will be taking people's benefits, all this sort of stuff. So there was a definite element of agitation going on. As the day went on, violence between Gardaí, that is police, and some protesters began to happen. And this was kind of sometimes simply local thugs and sometimes from outside the area deciding here's an opportunity to make trouble. It's like what happened in the Dublin riot late last year. I think I might have been on with you talking about that too.
That's right, yep.
And so what happened there was a non-national, shall we say, had been involved in a violent stabbing involving some victims, and the locals basically kicked off. And some of those who joined in were simply local thugs who decided to start looting shops and fighting the Gardaí. So this was a little bit like that, although it didn't become as big. Local thugs, some from outside the area, some who belonged to actual criminal gangs, began to get involved, and the Gardaí arrested about 20 people and brought them to court. Then a couple of days later, there was similar acts. They weren't as bad. I think the Gardaí had them better under control. The politicians have been, you know, loud in condemnation of what's going on, but at the same time, they don't want to alienate everybody from Coolock, because a lot of very ordinary Coolock inhabitants also don't like what's happening. So they're having to distinguish between the violent protesters and the peaceful protesters.
So where did it end up then? So you had at least one vehicle was burnt, right? They set it on fire.
Yeah.
And by the evening, it like these sort of, again, scenes similar to Dublin last year. But where did it all end up? Has it settled down again? Have the protesters gone away? Is the peaceful camp still there?
So there was either two or three Garda cars that got damaged. A JCB was set on fire. This is not the first day. And then about, was it two nights ago, there was up to 1,000 protesters converged in the area. Some from outside the area, a lot from the from Coolock itself. And there was a bit of trouble. And the Gardaí came in again, and they had to send in the kind of heavy squad, so to speak, you know, with riot gear and that kind of thing on. It didn't kick off as badly as the other day. But, I mean, there's still a constant local protest. There's been several arson attacks on the factory. It's a big complex with a number of buildings. It amazes me that despite them knowing this place would be a target for arson attacks, some of those arson attacks have happened anyway. So clearly the place has not been properly protected. But the protest is still going on. They still don't want this happening, but the place is being transformed because they put big barriers around it so people can't get in as easily to stop things happening.
So it is still effectively a type of sort of ongoing protest that every now and then escalates into sort of siege mentality. Is that how you'd describe it?
Yes, somewhat. And it's hard to know exactly where it's all going to stop and how it'll stop. And if the protesters will simply decide, well, we're giving up now because we can't do anything about it. Or will they simply stay there even if and when it's transformed into the accommodation centre that which the government wants it to be? Because it is possible that they simply won't go away at all. Even when it's transformed into this accommodation centre and they've moved people in, they might still stay outside. And so there might be an indefinite presence.
So when the police came in initially the other day and this all kicked off, were they trying to move everyone out or were they just trying to create a pathway for the works to begin?
They were trying to create a pathway for the works to begin because to actually clear the whole area would have taken the most enormous effort and also would have been an attack on civil liberties if they had really tried to clear them out. It's on a really busy road and they did have to shut the road down completely for a while because you couldn't have traffic going in and out with all this trouble taking place. But to actually stop people coming anywhere near it would be just an attack on basic civil liberties.
We'll talk in a second about some of the bigger issues because I know you've actually spoken and written publicly about this. But how would you describe the general mood in sort of Ireland regarding this incident and what's happened here?
So opinion polls have been consistently showing that about 2/3 of the public are concerned that immigration is getting out of hand. And there's a distinction obviously to be made between legal economic immigration, people coming in legally to claim asylum, and those coming in pretending that they're fleeing persecution when in fact they're economic migrants in disguise. But Ireland now has one of the highest rates of immigration in Europe. I think we're about the third or fourth highest country for that. The other countries, by the way, are really tiny countries like Cyprus and Malta. I mean, Ireland is obviously a very small country like New Zealand. Cyprus and Malta are way smaller. But our country has seen an extremely fast rate of population increase. We have a housing shortage, which young people in particular find incredibly challenging. It's very hard for young people to move out of home now because it's just so expensive to move out of home. So there's big strains on the infrastructure. On the other hand, we have a booming economy thanks chiefly to the tech sector. So there is demand for jobs. So employers say we need more and more and more immigration. The real issue though for people at the moment is the asylum issue because they see all these people coming in ever greater numbers. They do tend to be young men. This is the same everywhere. And they're wondering, why is it mainly young men and what's this all about? And then some of the people on the far right say, well, these are unvetted males and they could be criminals for all we know. So this is the sort of thing used to stir up fear. But the number of asylum seekers coming into the country, it was 10,000 last year and it's looking like it'll be in excess of 20,000 this year.
David, is this a plan, an economic scheme to try and make up for the lack of babies, or is this that sort of European elite hubris where they just they think they're helping, but they're just making it worse by, you know, a lack of prudence of immigration?
Well, again, I mean, there's two separate issues. So one is the economic immigration. So the government is definitely planning that because they say, well, the economy needs workers, so we're just going to keep importing people into the country through the legal immigration scheme. And I know in New Zealand, you know, there's constant debates about exactly what's the right level of legal immigration to allow. Same in Australia, where I lived for a few years. So it's a common thing. But so that's planned. But the asylum seeking is not planned because, you know, if they are fleeing areas of persecution, you don't know where the next big persecution or war is going to break out and then suddenly people start arriving. But they're arriving in numbers that were never before anticipated. And so people are concerned about, well, how open-ended can this be? And where does this end? And when you add in eventually family reunification programs, how many are we going to end up with? How well can they integrate into the local population? Like, for example, when the war between Russia and Ukraine kicked off, we ended up with about 100,000 Ukrainians coming here. Now, these were mainly women and children, but they integrate pretty easily. So there's obviously more of a concern. If you come from a culture that in its values is very far removed from a place like Ireland, how well integrated will those people eventually be? And we see in, you know, parts of Europe like Sweden, Denmark, France, Germany, Britain, people from some countries, and I'm just going to pick one, Afghanistan, don't necessarily integrate as quickly. And me even saying that, you see, is a risky thing, isn't it?
Yeah, of course. And I was going to ask you that question then. Are you seeing that sort of ghettoisation that some of the other countries are seeing?
I don't think we're particularly seeing it yet because I think in terms of immigration from parts of the developing world, if I can put it that way, North Africa, Middle East, and so on. We haven't seen too much of it yet. We have a population of about 100,000 Muslims, and they seem to be pretty well integrated because they've come in at a slow rate. If you drive around Ireland, you're rarely going to see still places where you're thinking, it doesn't look like I'm in Ireland anymore. It looks like I'm somewhere completely different. So that hasn't really happened yet, but that could easily happen now over the next couple of decades, depending on how we handle things going forward.
So you've mentioned the housing. We talked about this a little bit last time, and I was going to ask you, is this still an issue? Is it also things like healthcare and other infrastructure that starts to get a bit strained and the pressure goes on with numbers as well?
Yes, I mean, without question. So the big one is housing. There are some strains in the healthcare system. I mean, on the other hand, the healthcare system is heavily staffed by immigrant workers from places like India and Pakistan and the Philippines. So if we didn't have them, we'd be in worse condition. But you see, that's legal immigration, so it's different. Yeah. And there's still questions to be asked about what is the appropriate level of legal immigration, because the economy can't be the only consideration. There has to be also things like, well, what is the effect on housing, and how quickly can we integrate this very large number of people, and what are the downstream effects of bringing so many people into the country so quickly, and can we really integrate them, or will there be social disruption down the road like there has been in places like France and elsewhere? So these are questions that are still unanswered, and there are questions, by the way, that essentially we're not allowed to ask, because we've got to keep on saying to ourselves, it's always good, diversity is always good, these people are all wonderful and they'll integrate no problem whatsoever. And if you point to what's happening in other countries, you're simply shut down.
I was going to ask you about that. Do you, because you sort of hinted at that earlier, do you feel a sense of trepidation even having to speak up or to have the discussion publicly about these issues?
Well, a little bit. But if I'm in debates, I mean, what I will say to people who would have the opposing point of view. So I always ask, do you favour open borders? And the answer is usually no. And I said, well, why don't you favour open borders? Well, you know, we can't bring in too many at one go because we mightn't be able to cope. Okay, so you don't favour open borders. Therefore, you favour managed immigration. Therefore, the debate then becomes, well, how many should we accept in 1 year or over 10 years? And so then you have them kind of in a more rational space. And then the debate becomes, okay, are certain populations more integratable than populations from very, very different cultures than Ireland? And they're reluctant to go there But they kind of have to admit, yes, that somebody coming from Poland is probably easier to integrate into Ireland because they're a kind of Catholic European country than somebody from the Middle East.
You tweeted a couple of days ago, much punditry now consists of the middle class talking down to the working class about immigration. Do you, in a sense, mean that there is a sort of like a laptop class here that are, in a sense, insulated, that they're more than happy to welcome the immigrants because it's not their neighbourhoods, it's not their cafes and eateries that are all of a sudden chocked to the brim, that someone else is dealing with a problem that they're creating, in a sense?
Yeah, totally. So I live in a middle-class part of Dublin, and I grew up here as well. And this area looks like it did when I was growing up. Mm. There's hardly any immigrants in the area. But if you go into some of these working-class areas, they've changed. And if you go into the city centre, the north side city centre, I think it's probably majority-minority, if you know what I mean, at this point.
Yeah.
So the middle class, therefore, are lecturing the working class about something that they don't have to deal with day-to-day at all.
Yeah.
So it's easy for them to talk, in other words. And the asylum seekers are mainly being moved into areas of social deprivation or small rural communities. So you have examples of small rural village, only 200 people live there. There's a disused hotel nearby, and now they're proposing to move 200 asylum seekers into that hotel. So that's 200 asylum seekers and a local population of 200. And so kind of the Dublin middle class are talking down to them as well when they hardly ever have to deal with the situation themselves.
So how long do you think can you push? I know that, I mean, the Irish, they don't tend to be pushed around forever. And I get it. Things have probably changed in the decades since the Troubles. But, you know, that old saying about, you know, the Irish heart and you know, I die with my hands untied and all the rest of it. Mm. Is there a point at which you sense this is starting to heat up just a little bit too much and there's a volatility to this that could actually result in a pushback?
Well, like the most significant thing politically that's happening lately is the collapse in Sinn Féin support. So Sinn Féin has been historically the political expression of the IRA, which will be obviously, you know, well familiar to people in New Zealand. So we had a general election in 2020 and Sinn Féin did really well. In fact, they did the best of all the parties, but they weren't able to form a coalition government, so they remain in opposition. So all the predictions were when the next general election comes around in the next few months, Sinn Féin are going to do really well and might be in government. But they've seen their poll ratings sag until where it's about half what it was at one point, maybe even less than half what it was at one point. And we had local and European elections recently where they did really badly. So the weird thing that's happening is the more asylum seekers come into the country, the worse Sinn Féin is getting, not the government. And I think the answer to the riddle is that these asylum seekers are being moved in mainly to areas where Sinn Féin has a lot of support. They're not being moved into areas where the government parties, namely Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, have a lot of support. So these working class communities where the strong Sinn Féin votes see these asylum seekers being moved into their communities and they're blaming Sinn Féin for not defending them. And Sinn Féin have what I call the social democratic dilemma. Now, what I mean by that is these kind of centre-left parties from all around Europe have this dilemma whereby they must choose between keeping the support of their traditional working class voters or opting for multiculturalism. And in nearly every case, the social democrats around Europe have opted for multiculturalism over their traditional working class supporters. And as a result of that, they have lost their working class supporters to the likes of Marine Le Pen in France. And so on. You go all around Europe and you see the working class are now mainly moving towards these so-called populist nationalist, sometimes far-right parties. And the Social Democrats have simply sat back and they said, OK, so be it. Let them abandon us. And Sinn Féin are now where they have to make this really big historical decision, you know, in their own terms. Do we opt for multiculturalism or do we stick with our working class base? And they're absolutely being torn over this because they have this, what I call the kind of left-wing lawyer, middle-class type support, and they all believe in multiculturalism. And so they're extremely strongly influential in their parties, as middle-class, educated lawyer types tend to be. And they've got the media the whole time pushing them in the multiculturalist direction. But then they have the working class supporters saying, you're not defending us. And so which way is Sinn Féin going to go? It's kind of still in the balance. Sinn Féin came out yesterday with a new immigration policy statement that was, a lot of it was on the one hand. On the other hand, they've been trying to have it both ways still between, well, we love multiculturalism, but at the same time, we don't alienate our working class support. And I think they have to make a decisive choice. And if their decisive choice is for multiculturalism, they can wave goodbye to the working class. The only social democratic party in Europe that has stayed in power are the Danish Social Democrats, because the Danish Social Democrats decided we're sticking with our working class supporters. And they really cracked down hard on asylum seeking. So Denmark, with the same population as New Zealand, the same population as Ireland, has 1/10 the number of asylum seekers coming into that country as Ireland does, because they've got really strict about it. So therefore, they've kept the working class supporters and they're still in power.
Do you have a Farage or a Le Pen type figure who's waiting in the wings, or not? You're not quite there yet?
No. So you do have these right-wing anti-immigrant parties. They're very small. We had these local and European elections there a few weeks ago, and they got a handful of local councillors in. But they don't have a kind of charismatic leader who's really able to get people going, like your Farage types. So that kind of person hasn't appeared yet. I think if such a person did appear, their support could begin to grow. I think the support of some of these parties might begin to grow anyway, because if Sinn Féin simply refuses to really defend what the working class consider to be their interests, and the working class perceive you don't care about us anymore, then it just creates a vacuum. And you see, like, Sinn Féin has been lectured to all the time by the media. You must not pander to this anti-immigrant sentiment. You must not go down the racist road, all this kind of thing. And Sinn Féin are dead nervous about seeming to defend their working class supporters in case they get called racist. This is why they're torn. But if somebody sooner or later is going to come along and say to those disenfranchised working class people, we'll be your representatives. So Sinn Féin won't be your representatives, we're going to be your representatives. And I think it's inevitable that that's going to happen unless Sinn Féin decides to fill the gap instead.
David, I've got one last question to wrap this all up. You're on the record as saying that this isn't going to go away unless the deeper underlying issue is addressed. Give us a summary of how you would describe that underlying issue, and I guess more importantly, what do you think a workable solution actually looks like to that underlying issue?
Well, I mean, okay, I can't remember exactly the context for that tweet, but it was probably something like the underlying issue in this whole thing is we have a broken asylum system. People are coming into the country in large and increasing numbers. A lot of them are economic migrants in disguise. The processing system is incredibly slow. Even when a person fails in their asylum application, they appeal. That takes ages because the whole thing is so slow. Even when they finally fail, they're almost never deported. They're told you can voluntarily leave. A lot don't leave. So the system simply isn't working. There's not enough people working in the system. There's a backlog of about 20,000 asylum seekers in the system. And apparently at the present rate, it will take 2 years to process all those applications. In the meantime, more and more people are coming in. So they need to seriously get control of the situation. And one big way to do that is more staff, but also just get more serious about it. Be willing to send people home if they fail their asylum application. What's also happening, by the way, is people have been coming in from countries like Nigeria, and a particular example is Georgia and Albania. They're both considered safe countries. So why are they coming here? There's no conflict in Georgia, no conflict in Albania that they're fleeing. And in they were coming because the word was going out that Ireland is an easy place to come to and an easy place to stay. And if you're talking to other asylum seekers and you're talking to the gangs who bring these people into Europe, the word goes around, Ireland is an easy place to go to and an easy place to stay. So they've got to fix all that.
Do you think a pause or a halt to immigration is necessary, or is it not quite that serious yet?
I wouldn't have thought so, no. I mean, we do need immigrants. There's no question about that. So it's simply a matter of how many do we need at any given time? What strains will this place in the housing structure? How quickly can they be socially integrated? So these are the questions to be considered. So on the economic immigration side, they've got to ask hard questions about how many should we actually take into the country at any one time, because it's a very large number at the moment. But again, it's the asylum side of things that's mainly concerning people, because that looks uncontrolled. You can control legal immigration. And again, there's questions as to how high or low that should be. But people feel like the asylum system is going out of control, because you know, when you look at EU asylum figures by country, we have one of the highest proportions coming in. Like, it's very strange. Italy is a frontline country directly opposite the Mediterranean. Italy has proportionately less people seeking asylum there than we have in Ireland, which is right on the edge of Europe. So there's very strange things happening, and they see that the government, the state, and Sinn Féin are not trying to do enough about it.
If you're a betting man, what do you think's going to happen with Coolock going forward? Do you think it'll settle down, they'll just get in there and do their work, or what happens?
I'm assuming that they will transform it into an accommodation centre. They might not put 500 in there. It might be less than that, because it will just annoy people too much in the locality. So they might end up, I don't know, I mean, this is a fairly wild guess, with 200 in there or something. But I mean, they're going to have to put them somewhere unless the government begins to take back control of the situation more. I mean, what I'd like to see actually is them going into more middle-class areas. Yeah. Middle-class areas are less socially deprived. So we've got to stop, you know, like, middle-class people who give out about these working-class communities have got to put their money where their mouth is and hand over their local hotels to asylum seekers. But I can guarantee you what will happen then is support for the government will plunge. Because if the middle-class decide we don't want this, then things will change fast.
Well, that's very well put, David. And on that note, it seems like an appropriate place to end things. So thanks for taking the time to speak to us. The time difference between us and Ireland is quite a wide gulf. So thank you for taking the time.
Sure.
And hopefully we won't have to talk about too many more riots in future. You might get a bit of wise political movement on this.
Thank you.
So there you go, folks. I hope you enjoyed that informative interview with David Quinn about the upheaval that is happening in Irish culture and politics regarding the issue of immigration. Thanks for tuning in. And don't forget, live by goodness, truth and beauty, not by lies. And I'll see you next time on The Dispatches. The Dispatches podcast is a production of Left Foot Media. If you enjoyed this show, then please help us to ensure that more of this great content keeps getting made by becoming a patron of our work at patreon.com/leftfootmedia. Link in the show notes. Thanks for listening. See you next time on The Dispatches.